Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, Anne Ball brings us Ask a Teacher. We also hear a report from Brian Lynn. And we close the show with the American Story, Two Thanksgiving Day Gentlemen by O. Henry. But first, Ashley Thompson joins me for this story.
Would you like to ride in my little balloon? Would you like to ride in my little balloon?
The path of human aviation is uneven and dangerous. But from the ancient story of an English king killed in his attempt to fly with handmade wings, to the launchings of rockets to the International Space Station, the desire for flight continues. Some people think of the American brothers Wilbur and Orville Wright as the first pilots of the sky. In 1903, the two men made four brief flights in a powered plane in North Carolina. But more than 100 years earlier, two Frenchmen were actually the first to float through the sky.
On November 21, 1783, Jean-François Pilatre de Rosier and Marquis d'Arlande got into a small open airboat. Above their heads, long ropes attached the craft to a huge hot air balloon. The balloon rose slowly, carrying its pilots over a public park in Paris. In 1785, two other pilots flew a similar airship across the English Channel.
Although it never became a main form of transportation, balloon flight has stuck. Today, hot air balloon fans celebrate the aircraft in festivals around the world. Hundreds of thousands recently attended the largest such event held in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The Lyon International Balloon Festival just closed in Mexico. Similar celebrations take place in Canada, France, and Japan, to name a few. Today, we explore a few of these events.
In Saga, Japan, more than 100 balloons from about 20 countries take part in a 5-day competition and celebration. Competitors are tested on flight control and other skills. Balloons rise into the air from along the Kasai River each day. Others are launched elsewhere and can be seen in the air over homes and other buildings. However, one of the most beautiful sights at the Saga International Balloon Festival happens after dark, during La Montgolfière Nocturne. Known as the Night Mooring in English, the event involves balloons lining up on the riverside. The balloons all light up at once from the firing of their burners. The result is an extensive, extraordinary glow, which is reflected in the river. The balloon festival in Saga takes place each year in early November.
Next, we travel to the central Mexican city of León. The yearly balloon celebration there is known as FIG, for Festival Internacional del Globo. The 2019 event took place from November 15th to 18th. The FIG is the biggest balloon festival in Latin America. About 200 hot air balloons and pilots from 15 different countries are involved. Hundreds of thousands of visitors attend. The first FIG took place in 2002 with just 25 balloons. Its website says, that year, the event began the magic and the first experience of seeing this dream fly by painting the sky of León.
At the 2014 FIG, American aviator Jonathan Trapp made history and paid respects to the beloved American film Up. The pilot attached dozens of balloons to an airboat that looked much like the house in the 2009 film. Then, just like the character Carl in the movie, Trapp floated the house up into the air. He traveled over Mexico that way for several days. Like at other festivals, the balloons come in different colors and shapes. Visitors might look up and see the Disney character, Mickey Mouse. Or they might see a yellow smiley face, a giant heart, a space creature, or a clown and zebra flying side by side.
The biggest hot air balloon festival in the world takes place in the American city of Albuquerque, New Mexico. It is called the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta. Organizers of the event say more than 850,000 people attended the 9-day event this year. There were almost 600 balloons and 671 pilots from around the world. The fiesta also appeals to photographers, both professional and amateur. It has long included a competition for best pictures of the celebration. That contest is named in honor of Cindy Patron, the official photographer of the Albuquerque Festival until her death in 2013. Patron was also a balloon pilot herself. She captured images from and of hot air balloons all over the world.
In this year's photography contest, Jeff Wehmer won first prize for a picture that gives a look up and across the balloon field. In the image, a balloon in the shape of artist Vincent van Gogh is seen floating. Just beyond is a balloon of Darth Vader from Star Wars, and a balloon in the shape of a cow. They are among the many more traditional balloons in the sea blue sky over the extraordinary Rio Grande Valley. Balloon pilot Gary Mikulik has been flying hot air balloons for 32 years and has been coming to the festival in Albuquerque for 20 years. Flying above the surface of the earth, like really close to the ground or high up, I mean, it's unique. You have few types of aviation where you can just float above the ground. Fiesta Operations Director Sam Parks is proud of his work. One of the things that I heard yesterday, which really touched my heart, was a young boy telling his mother, "This is the best day ever." That, he added, makes you feel like you are doing a good thing.
Thousands of South Koreans have taken part in living funeral services in an effort to help improve their lives. The experience is designed to simulate death for individuals seeking to increase their knowledge about their current lives. More than 25,000 people have completed mass living funerals at the Hyo-won Healing Center in Seoul since it opened in 2012. Once you become conscious of death and experience it, you undertake a new approach to life, said 75-year-old Cho Jae-hee. Cho took part in a living funeral that was part of a dying well program offered by her local community center. The event was attended by many people from the area, both young and old. During the program, people are asked to lie down in a closed coffin for about 10 minutes. They can also write a will and take funeral pictures. University student Che Jin-kyu also took part in a dying well event. He told Reuters news agency the experience helped him realize that too often he considers others as competitors. "When I was in the coffin, I wondered what use that is," the 28-year-old said. Che added that he now plans to start his own business after finishing school instead of trying to enter the highly competitive job market. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, has rated South Korea 33 out of 40 countries on its Better Life Index. The index considers many measures of personal well-being, including housing, income, employment, and health. Many younger South Koreans have high hopes for education and employment. But such hopes can be ruined because of economic conditions. Professor Yoo Eun-shil is a doctor at Seoul's Asan Medical Center who has written a book about death. "It is important to learn and prepare for death even at a young age," she told Reuters. In 2016, the World Health Organization reported South Korea's suicide rate was 20.2 per 100,000 people. That is nearly double the worldwide average of 10.53. Hyo-won Healing Center began offering living funerals to help people see the value in their current lives. The experience can also help people seeking forgiveness and better relationships with family and friends, said Jun Young-mun, the head of the center. Jun said he is pleased when people are able to reconcile at a family member's funeral. But he is saddened that the connection could not happen sooner. "We don't have forever," he said. "That's why I think this experience is so important. We can apologize and reconcile sooner and live the rest of our lives happily." I'm Brian Lin.
This week, we answer a question from Reza in Bangladesh. Reza writes, "Trust me or believe me? When I try to make my friend understand I am right with what I say, which one should I use of these two phrases?" Dear Reza, thank you for your question. You can use either word to try to persuade your friend. But whether or not your friend accepts what you say likely depends on how long you have known each other. Trust usually comes with time. Let's look at an example. You tell your friend, "Believe me, I know how to pick the best winning football team. Here, you are using believe me to add force to your point. But in order to really convince your friend, you will likely have to show a few examples of how you have been right in the past. Until you prove it, he might not trust that you know what you are talking about. Here is another example. Your friend sells bicycles for a living. You know she is an expert on the subject. Her experience means you trust her opinion when she takes you to buy a bicycle. Reza, she says, trust me, this is a really good bike for the price. If I were you, I would buy it. She is also using trust me to add force to her point. But here, she is suggesting that you do not need to verify or check to see if what she says is true. She has already earned your trust. So your response may be, I trust you. If you think this bike is a good deal, then I am ready to buy it. I want it in red. We hope you trust us to answer your questions in Ask a Teacher. I'm Ann Ball.
Two Thanksgiving Day Gentlemen. There is one day that is ours. There is one day when all Americans go back to the old home and eat a big dinner. Bless the day. The president gives it to us every year. Sometimes he talks about the people who had the first Thanksgiving. They were the Puritans. They were some people who landed on our Atlantic shore. We really don't remember much about them. But those people ate a large bird called turkey on the first Thanksgiving day. So we have turkey for Thanksgiving dinner, if we have enough money to buy a turkey. That is a tradition. Yes, Thanksgiving Day is the one day of the year that is purely American. And now here's the story to prove to you that we have old traditions in this new country. They are growing older more quickly than traditions in old countries. That is because we are so young and full of life. We do everything quickly. Stuffy Pete sat down on a seat in the New York City park named Union Square. It was the third seat to the right as you enter Union Square from the east. Every Thanksgiving Day, for 9 years, he had sat down there at 1 in the afternoon. Every time, things had happened to him. They were wonderful things. They made his heart feel full of joy. And they filled another part of him, too. They filled the part below his heart. On those other Thanksgiving days, he had been hungry. It is a strange thing. There are rich people who wish to help the poor, but many of them seem to think that the poor are hungry only on Thanksgiving Day. But today, Pete was not hungry. He had come from a dinner so big that he had almost no power to move. His light green eyes looked out from a gray face on which there was still a little food. His breath was short. His body had suddenly become too big for his clothes. It seemed ready to break out of them. They were torn. You could see his skin through a hole in the front of his shirt. But the cold wind with snow in it felt pleasantly cool to him. For Stuffy Pete was overheated with the warmth of all he had had to eat. The dinner had been much too big. It seemed to him that his dinner had included all the turkey and all the other food in the whole world. So he sat, very, very full. He looked out at the world without interest, as if it could never offer him anything more. The dinner had not been expected. He had been passing a large house near the beginning of that great broad street called Fifth Avenue. It was the home of two ladies of an old family. These two old ladies had a deep love of traditions. There were certain things they always did. On Thanksgiving Day at noon, they always sent a servant to stand at the door. There he waited for the first hungry person to walk by. The servant had orders to bring that person into the house and feed him until he could eat no more. Stuffy Pete happened to pass by on his way to the park. The servant had gathered him in. Tradition had been followed. Stuffy Pete sat in the park looking straight before him for 10 minutes. Then he felt a desire to look in another direction. With a very great effort, he moved his head slowly to the left. Then his eyes grew wider and his breath stopped. His feet in their torn shoes at the ends of his short legs moved about on the ground. For the old gentleman was coming across Fourth Avenue toward Stuffy's seat. Every Thanksgiving for 9 years, the old gentleman had come there to find Stuffy Pete on his seat. That was a thing that the old gentleman was trying to make into a tradition. Every Thanksgiving Day for 9 years, he had found Stuffy there. Then he had led Stuffy to a restaurant and watched him eat a big dinner. They do these things more easily in old countries like England. They do them without thinking about them. But in this young country, we must think about them. In order to build a tradition, we must do the same thing again and again for a long time. The old gentleman loved his country. He believed he was helping to build a great American tradition. And he had been doing very well. 9 years is a long time here. The old gentleman moved straight and proud toward the tradition that he was building. Truly, feeding Stuffy Pete once a year was not a very important tradition. There are greater and more important traditions in England. But it was a beginning. It proved that a tradition was at least possible in America. The old gentleman was thin and tall and 60. He was dressed all in black. He wore eyeglasses. His hair was whiter and thinner than it had been last year. His legs did not seem as strong as they had seemed the year before. As this kind old gentleman came toward him, Stuffy began to shake and his breath was shorter. He wished he could fly away, but he could not move from his seat. "Good morning," said the old gentleman. "I'm glad to see that the troubles of another year have not hurt you. You continue to move in health about the beautiful world. For that blessing, you and I can give thanks on this day of Thanksgiving. If you will come with me, my man, I will give you a dinner that will surely make your body feel as thankful as your mind." That is what the old gentleman said every time, every Thanksgiving Day, for 9 years. The words themselves were almost a tradition. Always before, they had been music in Stuffy's ear. But now he looked up at the old gentleman's face with tears of suffering in his eyes. The snow turned quickly to water when it fell upon his hot face. but the old gentleman was shaking with the cold. He turned away with his back to the wind, and he did not see Stuffy's eyes. Stuffy had always wondered why the old gentleman seemed sad as he spoke. He did not know that it was because the old gentleman was wishing that he had a son. A son would come there after he himself was gone. A son would stand proud and strong before Stuffy and say, "In remembrance of my father," then it would really be a tradition. But the old gentleman had no family. He lived in a room in one of the old houses near the park. In the winter, he grew a few flowers there. In the spring, he walked on Fifth Avenue. In the summer, he lived in a farmhouse in the hills outside New York. And he talked of a strange bug he hoped someday to find. In the fall season, he gave Stuffy a dinner. These were the things that filled the old gentleman's life. Stuffy Pete looked up at him for half a minute, helpless and very sorry for himself. The old gentleman's eyes were bright with the giving pleasure. His face was getting older every year, but his clothes were very clean and fresh. And then Stuffy made a strange noise. He was trying to speak, as the old gentleman had heard the noise 9 times before. He understood it. He knew that Stuffy was accepting.
"Thank you. I'm very hungry."
Stuffy was very full. But he understood that he was part of a tradition. His desire for food on Thanksgiving Day was not his own. It belonged to this kind old gentleman. True, America is free, but there are some things that must be done. The old gentleman led Stuffy to the restaurant and to the same table where they had always gone. They were known there.
"Here comes that old man," said a waiter. "It buys the old no good fella a dinner every Thanksgiving."
The old gentleman sat at the table watching. The waiters brought food and more food, and Stuffy began to eat. No great and famous soldier ever battled more strongly against an enemy. The turkey and all the other food were gone almost as quickly as they appeared. Stuffy saw the look of happiness on the old gentleman's face. He continued to eat in order to keep it there. In an hour, the battle was finished.
"Thank you," Stuffy said. "Thank you for my Thanksgiving dinner."
Then he stood up heavily and started to go to the wrong door. A waiter turned him in the right direction. The old gentleman carefully counted out $1.30 and left 15 cents more for the waiter. They said goodbye, as they did each year, at the door. The old gentleman went south, and Stuffy went north. Stuffy went around the first corner and stood for 1 minute. Then he fell. There he was found. He was picked up and taken to a hospital. They put him on a bed and began to try to discover what strange sickness had made him fall. And an hour later, the old gentleman was brought to the same hospital. And they put him on another bed and began to try to discover what his sickness could be. After a little time, one of the doctors met another doctor, and they talked. "That nice old gentleman over there," he said, "do you know what's wrong with him? He's almost dead for the need of food. A very proud old man, I think. He told me he has had nothing to eat for 3 days.
That's our show for today. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.